I see the red lights on. Okay, we're April 9th. The House Judiciary comes together at 12 minutes after 1. And this time of year, it takes a little, everybody's here hither, thither, and yon in different meetings. We have today Representative Gruenberger is with us, Representative Foster, Representative Lynn, and myself, Representative Keller. We're going to start with SB 56 and find out where we're at. We left it with a few things to be resolved, and we'll let the representative of the sponsor introduce himself and tell us where we're at.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, Chief of Staff to Senator Fred Dyson. After the last hearing, the main issue that was addressed was the drug GHB listed in AS 1171 as a Schedule 1 drug, and the concern that as this is used as a date rape drug, that we would not be giving a first strike offense as a misdemeanor to this drug. Sponsor agrees with that. It was never our intent, and frankly, even with all the eyes we've had on this bill, we just overlooked at it. The amendment that we have brought back today as a result of that carves out GHB entirely from this bill, and that is Amendment C9 to version 28-LS0355. Additionally, I'm happy to report that with the inclusion of this amendment, the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault sent out a note, which I believe the committee got, that says that this bill has their support and she hopes it moves forward. I also have Ms. Lisa, I'm not sure on the last name, is also here from the Alaska Network Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault today. So that is the only new amendment before the committee. We still have the amendments from yesterday, amendments C, which extend the look-back period for the that would include the length of time that a strike would apply toward a felony. We extended that from 5 to 7 years, again with a concern that we had enough time in the law to catch someone whose addictive behavior was not being reformed and they were not taking steps to rehabilitate themselves. And then the treatment amendment, Amendment C7, which is directive declaring that the court shall order the someone convicted of an offense under misconduct involving a controlled substance, fifth degree, as laid out in this bill, to satisfy the screening, evaluation, referral, and program requirements of an alcohol safety action or drug abuse evaluation program. And then the final amendment, which I begin with, which carves out GHB from the bill, the date rape drug, so that this bill will not in any way impact. Those are the amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So just to summarize to make sure the committee has the right papers in front of us, the one amendment is the one that we had before us, which is C.7, and the new one that you brought for us is labeled C.9 as drafted. Am I right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the sponsor?
I have C.6.
The amendment should be C.6, C.7, and C.9. Those are the three.
Okay, that's what I have. Thank you.
Thank you for clarification. Okay, great. So we closed public testimony on this bill, and we're going to open it up a little bit because we have one person online. Help me with the word here. Nicey, is it? Steinkruger? Fairbanks?
Yeah.
You're the only one that... We're going to go ahead and open up public testimony to hear what you have to say, and then we'll close it again. Go ahead. Identify yourself for the record and talk to us.
All right. If I may ask a question, Mr. Kopp, is this a committee that has not heard my input?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Dyson. This is retired Superior Court Judge Nisha Steinkruger. I don't believe she's testified in this committee, or has she?
Judge, we heard you on a different bill number, HB 78. That was the House version of it. So, yes, the committee has heard your testimony. So.
Yeah, thank you very much. My purpose is just to try and help folks understand what happens when things are classified as a felony or a misdemeanor, and having provided you with that information from my experience and reinforcing that it's not, I'm not taking a position for the court system. I'm only trying to provide some information based upon my years on the bench. I applaud you for looking at some of these things and seeing what the how the cause and effect works. So I have nothing further, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
We have a question from Representative Grunberg.
Not a question, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say hello, Judge Steinkruger. Glad to hear your voice again. Hope you're doing well.
I am doing well, but I'm finding that retirement is just as busy as working.
I wouldn't know. I hope I'll get there.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate it very much. So we're going to close public testimony on this, and or before the committee for discussion, amendments, whatever.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I'll do the first two, and yours is the last one, right? Oh, no, it's somebody else's. I'm sorry.
We got C-DOT 6 in front of us as one of the...
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I'll offer C-DOT 6.
And if it's okay, I'll object. If you would, Representative Grunberg, tell us again what the...
Should we label that number one?
Number one. Amendment number one.
This extends the look-back period to 7 years. The prosecutors, some of them were in favor of going back 10 years. As usual, this is a political compromise. I think it's a good one. I urge the amendment.
Okay. I'll remove my objection. Any more objection? If not, amendment number one passes. would you move amendment
two? Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, for the next one, I'm going to move the one that is in the upper right-hand corner, C.7.
Number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move amendment number two.
I'll object. If you would, go ahead and...
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, with the concurrence and support of the prosecution, the state, this is added... modeled on the DUI counseling, and it says that a person who's convicted of misconduct in the fifth degree must be screened, evaluated, and if necessary, referred, and go through the program. I understand this is very successful and does not cause abuses here, and everybody seems to be on board with it. It's a friendly amendment. Sponsor is nodding and smiling. Don't forget to smile. Thank you. And I move the amendment.
Okay, and like I said, you already did, and I objected. We need to ask the department to come up and talk about this one because it probably is a fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Wilda Laughlin. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Health and Social Services. We became aware of this amendment yesterday and believe that it will have a fiscal impact on the department. We're still working on quantifying that. I have someone online who can answer more questions on why we think that it might have a fiscal impact.
And who might that be?
His name is Tony Piper.
I don't have any information.
We had to line it up very quickly.
Okay. Tony, are you online?
Yes, I am, sir.
would you tell us what why you believe there's a fiscal impact here?
It would require the ASAP office to be available now for those people who would now become misdemeanors. The ASAP office does the screening and referrals for all misdemeanor offenses, and so these were previously would be felonies. Now they would become misdemeanors. Any of those people would now have to come through the ASAP office.
Always a curve here and there. So you have no idea at this point. I mean, it's going to take a crystal ball to know how this will affect you, right? So you're not going to come up with anything definitive. You're probably going to come up with an indeterminate, am I guessing, right?
Yes, sir.
So I guess that's an inevitable consequence that we're going to have to live with. So is I'll remove my objection to the amendment. Is there any other objection? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we were looking at some information prior to this hearing, right prior to this hearing, that we might be able to come up with actual numbers. So we're doing our best.
Thank you, Wilda. It would even be better if the actual number was zero, I'm sure, from the perspective of the sponsor. But you have to do what you have to do. Thank you for your testimony.
I understand. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, we're back to the committee for the third amendment. Amendment number three.
Did we adopt number two?
I removed my objection, okay. Didn't see any other.
So I'm sorry, I was trying to figure out number three.
Okay. Somebody want to move amendment number three?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
The last amendment is C.9. I ask that it be labeled as number three. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And I'll move the amendment.
Okay, and I'll object for purposes of discussion in the group. I think we've had testimony on it from the sponsor. Is there any comments or questions or further concerns? If not, I will remove my objection and then feel free to carry it on, any of you. Okay, I remove my objection. I don't see any further objections, so amendment number three is adopted. Will of the committee on the bill or discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion? Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill number 56, 28-LS00355/C, where that be an indeterminate fiscal note now?
Just say attached fiscal note.
We attach fiscal note and as amended with individual recommendation.
Okay, seeing no objection, SB 56 moves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll take under these. Record, we're going to go for HB 3, and that the sponsor here is next to me, Representative Lynn. If you would give us an update of where we're at on this bill, and we'll see if the committee's going to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. HB 3, I think it's a good bill. Nothing in HB 3 whatsoever prevents anybody who's registered to vote and motivated to vote from doing so. They can identify themselves by a photo ID, two forms of non-photo ID. They can be recognized by two election workers or cast a question ballot. And it's our intent not to disenfranchise anybody, but to safeguard our precious right to vote in this state. That I urge you. Favorable consideration of this bill.
Okay. And so support a committee. Does anyone have any discussion or amendments on HB 3? Representative Foster.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendments number one. I believe it's the only amendment that we have.
Okay.
And
it's labeled U.2. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay, amendment number one has been moved. I'll object to it for purposes of your explanation, discussion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What the amendment number one does is it essentially, because of the circumstances and situation in rural Alaska is so unique with so many small communities, some of my communities, again, I've got some 60-plus communities in my district, and some of those have fewer than 100 people. And so what this would do is exempt communities under 5,000 from the requirements and essentially leave the requirements that are currently in statute in place, and which would be essentially either you would need a driver's license or current statute says if you don't have that, then you could also use hunting license or a utility bill, those being two, you know, the utility bill not being currently in the current legislation that's being proposed. The other part is currently what's being proposed in the legislation is to increase it from one person who would vouch to two people. And so this would just leave what's currently in place for rural Alaska. I do believe that, or I know that we have received a legal memo from Ledge Legal that essentially says that raises constitutional issues in terms of equality and requiring certain requirements for one part of the state while treating another part of the state differently. And so I do want to introduce the amendment just to raise the awareness, but at the same time I do realize the legal issues and therefore I will pull the amendment.
So, you're willing to what?
I'll pull the amendment. Pull it off the table.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to object for a moment to the motion to pull, withdraw, just for discussion.
I'm not sure it's on a motion. I think that's the option of the person making it. So you could ask him if he wants to leave it on the table for a little bit.
Could you?
I'd be willing to listen to Representative Grimberg.
Mr. Chair, do we have anybody from Ledge Legal on the phone on this one?
I believe we do, right. We do not, no.
I just hope, and I'm going to speak directly to my friend from
Representative Gruenberg and Representative Foster, you can enter into a dialogue if you like.
Thank you. You might check and see if it is an arguable issue, because if it is an arguable issue, might want to let the courts make a decision on this. I don't often say that, but I haven't seen any research on this at all. And you can always have it removed down the line. I'm sympathetic to what you're doing, and I haven't given this a lot of thought. And the question is going to be, it's an equal protection argument, and the question is going to be whether the distinction involves a fundamental right, and if so, if that right, if the way you're dealing with it is an appropriate way of dealing with it. And it's a sliding scale. And I think, that do you have a memo on this, a legal memo?
It looks like my staff is not here right now, but I was told that we were provided a memo. And
I'm sorry, Representative Gruenberg, let's go back to the chair here. Go ahead.
To the chair, yeah.
Yeah.
Before you give up, I'd like to take a look at that.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize that this isn't certainly the final stop here, and I understand that the sponsor would like to continue to see the debate move on, and I'm happy to continue to pursue this, and I very much do appreciate what you're saying in terms of, you know, this is something that should be looked at a little bit more. I do have faith in our alleged legal staff, and so I'm fairly confident that what they're saying is true, and certainly it could be taken to the courts and argued, and that's something that, you know, we will look at, and I think there are opportunities for that, and so we'll do that, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
If I may just say one other thing.
Representative Gruenberg?
Because if the standard, if it's not considered a fundamental right here, and what we're talking about is simply a form of identification, and there are rational and good reasons for having different standards for people who do not have the same ability to get the identification, I think it may very well withstand a constitutional challenge. And if necessary, you could put a severability clause in the bill so it wouldn't affect the rest of the bill.
That's worthy of consideration as it goes forward. So, but right now, we'll let it. There. So so Representative Ledoux.
Could I join the dialogue for just a second?
Representative Ledoux, there's been an amendment made and pulled, and it was I was kind of going beyond what I should anyway. By letting the debate and discussion continue. So let's save that issue. And Representative Foster, you have the option as the maker of the amendment to keep the debate going if you like. However, you know, it's your choice completely. You know, your statement that, you know, in future debates and future committees, that's great. So you're
right. Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity. And we will get the legislative memo out to the members here. And again, we do intend to pursue it as we move along through the process. And so we appreciate that.
Thanks. For her too.
Great. Thanks. Okay. So Amendment 1 has been pulled. Are there any other, is there other discussion or amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I have an amendment that's labeled U.1, and I would have that labeled if I could as amendment number 2.
Number 2. Yeah, Representative Grunberg, you are aware that that is a bill in another committee, I assume.
I am. That is, I am. Well aware. Are you about to rule it out of order?
I will, yes, but I would I will go ahead and invite you to explain what it is that you want to do.
Yeah,
I will rule it out of order because it is rolling in disrespect to the committee it's in and the members of that committee, you know, where the bill's at. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no disrespect for either the chair of that committee or yourself. This is offered on behalf of a colleague, the author of the bill, and it is simply reflective of his desire and mine on the merits to see the to make it a little easier to register to vote. And I understand and understood that this would be ruled out of order, and it certainly is made with no disrespect. And under the circumstances, I think that disposes of the amendment. I don't need to withdraw. You're doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to call on. Okay. Thank you, though. And what we're going to do, because I failed to close public testimony on this, we do have Jeffrey Mittman online. Jeffrey, please keep it very brief. I'm sorry that I did not close public testimony. We're into the committee work session, but go ahead and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, we've previously provided testimony and both written and oral to the committee. We're available to answer questions. I want to be respectful of the closing days and your process. If there are any questions the committee has with regard to our former testimony, I'm happy to answer them. As the committee is aware, we believe there are several constitutional infirmities with this bill. And with that, I will conclude.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your testimony, and we have read it, so thank you very much. We're back to the committee, and public testimony is closed, and is there further discussion? Oh, Representative Foster.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a final comment, and that was just going back to the bill here, And just to reiterate my points with regard to the three pieces of identification that would be, or the three points that would allow somebody to be able to vote, and again, that was, first of all, you'd either need a driver's license, for example, or a piece of photo ID, for example, driver's license. That would be number one. Number two was two pieces of ID that did not have a photo on it, and that could be typically, that would be like a birth certificate or a tribal ID. And as I talk about this, I'm thinking particularly about our elders out in rural Alaska, and for a lot of them, you know, me, I haven't seen my birth certificate in 20 years, and so somebody who's 70 years old, I think, you know, that could certainly be an issue. And then not everybody out in the villages have internet. A lot of them don't. And to be able to pull up the forms and so forth. And then tribal ID, not everybody's enrolled in a tribe out in a village. Again, you know, some people, they marry somebody from another village. And so when you're in that village, that tribe there has their tribal roles. And so if you're from Teller and you move to Shishmaref's, for example, that local tribe there won't have your name on the rolls to be able to issue you a tribal ID card. And then one statement was made about, well, you need a tribal ID in order to get the IHS services, Indian Health Services. And as for me, I was born into the system, and so I've never needed to show my tribal ID card. I just show up there. I don't even have to show a photo ID. I just show up at our Norton Sound Health Corporation in Nome there, and they just say, I say, I'm Neil Foster, and they say, were you born on this date? Because they're, you know, my dad was also a Neil Foster. And so it's really not required. Maybe initially when I was born, you know, my mom and dad, you know, gave them something, but that was 40 years ago. And then in terms of just two people vouching, again, I was just concerned about the issue of some of our communities are in jeopardy of having a polling place because they were having problems finding people. And so raising that from one people to two people is a concern. And so I just wanted to be as expansive and inclusive of folks being able to vote. And I think it's just things are so different in rural Alaska. And you really don't need ID. Even if you're an elder coming from Savunga and coming to Nome, you don't go through TSA because that's only required on the jets. You don't need it on the small airplanes. And again, you don't need to show any type of ID when you go to the hospital in Nome there. So anyway, that's just kind of my summary, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about it. Thanks.
Thank you, and thank you for the memo. Wrap up, Representative Lynn.
Well, I think everything said it needs to be said. The whole purpose of this bill is to help safeguard our voting process. I think that's essential. It's a foundation of this country, and certainly Alaska, is to be able to cast our votes, and this bill permits that.
Representative Pruitt, you have a motion for us.
Mr. Chair, I will make a motion for you to move HB 3, 28-LS0010, /U, out of committee with the accompanying recommendations and any fiscal notes. No amendments.
See, no objection. Bill passes, and we'll take an at ease.
I'd like to thank you. House State Affairs Committee, will please come back to order.
No, Judiciary.
Well, State Affairs Committee is a better committee, okay? Not really.
I won't quibble on that.
You won't quibble on that. House Judiciary Committee will come to order because we're not hearing any more in State Affairs this year. The House Judiciary Committee will please come to order. We'll now be considering again the CS for House Bill number 54, an act relating to identification, location, and notification of specified family member of a child who is in state custody with a sponsor. That bill, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Would you bring us up to date, please?
Yes, I'm here with Jane Pearson from Representative Thompson's office, the co-sponsor. So we understand there were some questions from yesterday. One was, does the word verify work? So really the only thing this bill does is when a social worker searches for family members to try and find...
One meeting here, please.
We have memos on this. I want to be sure they're distributed, Mr. Chair.
What? They've already been distributed, I'm told, by staff.
Okay.
And everybody should have it.
Yeah.
Please start in again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of this committee. This bill does one simple thing. I know it's two pages or maybe it's three pages, but it does one simple thing. The first couple of pages had to repeat what OCS already has in its policy manual. When OCS searches for a family member to become a foster parent, which, and they're often the best foster parent, but not always, in the end, the child gets placed in the best placement possible. So if there are no good family members, you go to a non-family member. The only thing this bill does is says a supervisor shall verify that the social worker in the first 30 days searched for family members and friends of family who might be appropriate. That's all the bill does. And so the question came up, is the word verify interpretable? And Jean Michelle says, yes, that's an illegal memo that you have from Jean Michelle. It's just the plain dictionary definition of verify. Doesn't require any wax seal, doesn't require that you burn your finger and put an imprint on the paper. It's they just put a check on a box inside a file, says I've spoken to the social worker, they've done their work. And the reason, obviously, we want to do that is there's a lot of turnover of social workers. Some of them are very green. Some of them, unfortunately, very few of them are maybe not cut out for the job, and we want to make sure that there's a check on the system because often a family member is the best foster care placement. The other question was, you know, what happens if you have a really bad parent out there and a child comes up for foster care? Does the current law, and that's not part of our bill, but does the current law require that you go notify that really bad parent that the child is up for foster care? And OCS says, you know, we do notify family members. You don't give out the address of the child. You don't give out the address of any other members of the family. You give a contact number at OCS, and you say, contact us if you'd like to be a foster parent. And if you're a crummy parent who has no custody, who just is not the right placement, and you're not going to become the foster parent. I mean, OCS will tell you that flat out. They'll put you in a safer, better foster home. But they do have to notify people with legal parental rights. You can't get around that. I would stress that that rule, the question of who they notify, that's already the law. That has nothing to do with our bill. But the question was raised.
Any questions from the committee on the verified party? Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, if I can cut to the chase for a second here.
You don't have to cut to the chase. It goes.
Thank you.
Do what needs to be done.
Okay. Representative Guerra and I have been working a lot on this, and the staff, Toby and everybody else, have been working too, Jane.
And I might point out I'm also a co-sponsor of the bill now.
Oh, okay, good. My questions are basically answered in a series of memos here. The one on verify, page 1, line 13, was answered by Jean Michelle in her memo of April 9, 2013, which everybody should have. The question that I had concerning the blood relative statute.
Yeah, and Jean Michelle, she is online for questions.
I don't need to ask her who this question is. Amanda Mativier answered that on the blood relative statute in her memo of Monday, April 8. The question on whether you parents who had not had their rights terminated, whether they must be notified, was answered by Christy Lawton, the head of OCS, Office of Children's Services, in her memo, it's attached to Toby Smith's of April 9, and that's a series of emails, and the attached federal statute is attached to that. And finally, the chair, Representative Keller, his question on if the requirement to search and contact non-custodial parents applied after a non-custodial parent's rights had been previously terminated. The answer is no, and that was also answered by Christy Lawton in her memo of April 4, 2013. And I believe that that answered all of my questions except for some drafting questions on page 1, line 7, whether the word "and" at the end of that sentence should be "or." No, the answer, it should remain "and." And I also asked about on page 2, line 3, whether due diligence should be changed to conducting the due diligence search. And the answer, Ms. Michelle told my staff, is no, because it could be more than one search. And on page 2, line 11, the underlying phrase, an adult family friend, that is correctly drafted also. Therefore, I am satisfied. I spent a considerable amount of time answering those questions. I really appreciate the sponsor's help on that. I have no amendments to offer and support the bill.
Okay. Any comments, Reverend Guerra?
No, Ms. Pearson and I are just here to ask questions if people have them at this point.
Okay. Do we have any? I have Christy Lawton online, Jane Michelle, and also Amanda. Do any of you folks, let me just start right down the list here. Christy, do you have any comments you'd like to make at this point?
No, sir, not at this time. I have nothing further to offer unless there's questions. This is Christy Lawton, Director of Office of Children's Services.
Okay. Jane? Jane Michelle? Any comments or questions where we are so far?
No, Mr. Chair, this is Jean Michelle with Legal Services. I'm here. I'm available for questions, but I have no further information to provide.
Okay, and how about Amanda? Amanda, I'll probably mess up your name. Metivier, how do you say it?
Metivier.
It's Amanda Metivier, and I don't have any comments. I just wanted to be available for questions. This is Amanda Metivier with Facing Foster Care in Alaska.
Okay. Anybody in the audience like to testify? Anybody else online? Okay. Let's close public testimony then. We'll bring it to the committee for discussion. Any discussion on the table? Representative,
yeah, I have a question. I think it would be for Christy.
Okay, Christy, you still there? Ms. Lawton?
Yes, this is Christy Lawton. I'm here.
Yeah. Representative Pruitt has a question, I believe, for you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Christy, one question that I do have is just want to make sure, is there additional effort that's going to have to be placed by the department to do these various things? I mean, and when I say effort, I mean, what is it? What is the manpower and personnel potential restraints that may prevent you from being able to do this? Do you have what you need, or are you going to have to potentially increase your staffing or something like that? I mean, just talk to me a little bit about the ability of the department to do this and with under what you currently have.
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, this addition really will not significantly impact our workload. Consultation between workers and supervisors is regularly occurring, as is the documentation of those discussions in terms of confirming compliance with state and federal law. This will enhance and just bring some clarity to how that documentation occurs and ensuring that the timeliness of that search occurs. But it will not. It should not impact, from a workload perspective, anything significantly. In the regard, we'd need additional resources.
Everything correct?
Yeah, and just follow up on that. And the only piece that I just really want to follow up there was is a very good point, and we're trying to make sure that we're expedient in our efforts here to place these individuals, especially with family members. Does the effort to expedite it have any sort of impact on the amount of effort and energy and ultimately what would be essentially manpower?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, the 30-day timeline for conducting the diligent search is already a federal requirement that we are currently operating under. This would just have the supervisor be having to document specifically that search did in fact occur as per policy and per law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other comment from the committee? I like this bill. I signed on as a co-sponsor, and I think some other folks in the committee like it also. I would prefer to hold the bill until we have the full committee present, see if they have any questions on it, too, so we can proceed as rapidly as possible. So we'll hold this bill until tomorrow, and what other bill do we have on the agenda today?
That's it
for
today.
Okay. Thank you to the committee. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. As soon as we have the full committee on board, we'll proceed with our business. Thank you so much.